Hey, everybody. This is Richard Deitch of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Bonus podcast this week. It is Laura Gentile, the Senior Vice President of ESPNW and Women's Initiatives. Had a very interesting conversation about ESPNW and all its multimedia parts, digital, social, television, films, and audio, as well as what it is like for front-facing and behind-the-scenes women at ESPN. I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. Let's go to Laura Gentile, the Senior Vice President of ESPNW and Women Initiatives. Hey, everybody, this is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Bonus podcast this week. We brought in a heavy hitter from ESPN. Laura Gentile is the Senior Vice President of ESPNW and Women's Initiatives. If you read ESPNW or if you have seen more women's coverage digitally, that is pretty. There's pretty much a direct line to Laura Gentile on that. There's other people, obviously, at ESPN who have championed women's sports, but she is she's one of the big point people there in terms of that initiative. Has worked at that company for a long time. We'll get into that. Was very close to George Bodenheimer, the former president, before John Skipper. And I think most impressively, Laura has entered this studio without any public relations people, which to me is, quite frankly, a miracle when it comes to ESPN staffers. Laura.
Welcome. Very brave. I'm very brave.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you.
All right, you're the second executive we have had behind Erica Nardini of Barstool Sports. I'll be very honest with Laura. I don't expect the traffic to be the same given the loyalty of Barstool Sports, but we are happy to have you. I want to start off with this. ESPNW for you is not just a project. It has been a passion, basically. This is something you really wanted to... You wanted to bring a business into ESPN dedicated to serve women who love sports. We'll give all the tags now. You can go to ESPNW.com. But it's not just a website. It's a website. It's television. It's films. You do events. And there's a summit every year as well where you get a lot of famous athletes, female athletes, you know, Serena types and Abby Wambach types, and business people to sort of all form and discuss stuff. So that's my long sort of prologue into what your content is about. Here's the interesting thing to me, and I'm sort of unique in this, in that I worked for Sports Illustrated for Women. When we founded that magazine, I was one of the founding editors. I moved from my regular job to do that. It launched. We worked for a couple years. It folded. Condé Nast Sports for Women launched, starts, folded. There have been many of these sort of initiatives. Why do you think or why do you believe that ESPNW can be sort of the initiative that lasts for the long term, where unfortunately so many of the other initiatives, so much momentum sort of especially for a print outlet, and then eventually it folded?
Yeah, it's hard to speak for the others because everybody goes into it with a certain vision. But for us, we've always taken the long view. So we didn't overpromise from the beginning that this was going to be an overnight sensation and we were going to reap, you know, incredible lucrative returns. We're very methodical about it. We knew it was going to take time. So we're basically going on year six. And
which is a success in itself,
I guess if you look at it. But yeah. I also was never of the opinion that this was going to fail. So I never really acknowledged that possibility. To me, the opportunity was too big. The time was too right. And then maybe what the others were lacking is we truly had senior leadership who believed in it. Now, it took time for all of us to get on the same page and to agree we were building towards the same vision. But that's, you know, part of a process of any startup. But for us, I think it was really thinking about this as more of a long-term plan and not something that had to prove itself overnight or in 2 years. So I think the expectations were realistic. And then, like I said, for me, the opportunity was just too undeniable not to just keep going at it.
I want to get into, because obviously this is a very interesting topic for those who are going to listen, about sort of ESPN's relationship to women at the company, particularly front-facing talent.
Sure.
Who are on television and who are writing and stuff. But let's start here on that. You've been with ESPN since 2003.
Yes.
So you're now in your 14th year at the company.
Seems like a lot, huh?
Seems like a lot. How has the company, in your opinion, evolved for what we'll tag as front-facing women and then women behind the scenes, producers, people in your although you're not really a behind-the-scenes person, but producers, audio people, PAs. How's the company evolved for women from 2003, in your opinion, to 2017?
Sure. Well, I think ESPN's always been ahead of the game in terms of front-facing female talent, even if you just look at Gail Gardner when we launched,
yep.
and Linda Cohn, and the women we've had in front of the camera from day one. But certainly in the last 14 years, that's just ratcheted up. I mean, you might have been aware, but on March 1st, the first day of Women's History Month, you know, we sat and we said, hey, we want to make sure that there's a woman in a featured role on every single show we do today. And the reality was it wasn't that hard to do that because it was sort of already in place. So we've made huge strides. I think we've always been ahead of the curve. But now, you know, whether it's, you know, SportsCenter or Around the Horn or, you know, many of our shows, you know, the 6 o'clock SportsCenter now with Jamel, women are playing huge roles. And the best thing, I think, Richard, for me is they're not just reading off a prompter and giving you highlights. They have a point of view. They have an opinion. They have a perspective. They're going toe-to-toe with their colleagues and saying, no, I disagree with you or I agree with you. But it's having a real conversation where they're equals.
You, in my opinion, there are times to be critical of ESPN where I think you have to give ESPN an inordinate amount of praise is when it comes to gender diversity and, as you mentioned, certain gender roles at ESPN. It is far and away the only place that has multiple women in opinion-producing roles on a daily basis everywhere, not just on TV, but on digital and audio. Now, I'm not asking you to trash your competitors here, but there is a very distinct difference when you look at other sports networks from ESPN. So why do you think that is? Why has ESPN made this corporate decision that we're going to put women in front-facing positions where they're not just hosts or not just taking you to the break, but they're giving you sports opinions in the same way everybody else does? And we don't see that far and away in any of your competitors, at least in the television space.
Well, we talk about it. I mean, we're really, really thoughtful about it. You know, we have women in decision-making roles now in the executive ranks where we push the issue. And we say it's not enough to just have a woman on set, you know, and looking nice, if you will.
Or in the, I mean, as you know, and I've certainly been sort of critical of this position, but like the traditional position for a woman on a debate show too often is sitting between two guys yelling and let's take you to break.
Yes. So we talk about that a lot. And it was definitely an objective for us in building ESPNW where, like you said, it's not a website alone. It's hopefully a larger influence within the company and maybe you can even say in the industry. But we've really focused on developing great voices. And they're not just writing for us. They're now appearing across our shows. And we pride ourselves on ensuring we have a perspective. And we're not sitting idle or we're not deferential. And I think around the company, it's something, you know, I talked to John Skipper about it. You know, like we want to make sure every woman who has a role, it's a real role.
What, you know, it seems very clear that as the chief executive, Skipper has, the buy-in from Skipper came.
Awesome.
Was it something that, I don't get the impression it was something that people like you had to convince him on, but let's be honest, if the buy-in doesn't come from the CEO, this doesn't happen. John Skipper has made a clear indication that he wants women in these kind of positions. He also wants people of color in these kind of positions. And we'll get to some backlash that exists because of that. But when did you sense that the buy-in was from the top? Because once the buy-in's from the top, then everything can happen.
Yeah, you know, but it's tricky too, because even if you do get the buy-in from the top, there's a lot of work to be done to convince everybody it matters.
Advertisers, producers, everybody along the line,
right? Yes, and that's how you really make change. So you could get, you know, and again, John was amazing from the beginning, but it doesn't end there. You know, the real work is, like you said, the day-to-day producers, the folks programming ESPN.com, the folks programming, you know, talking on radio and kind of figuring out how do we make our shows even more inclusive and have new voices on radio. So, yes, you cannot move forward unless you have that kind of senior leadership and excellent understanding of what we're doing. But that's where then the ensuing 5 years comes into play, where you're just constantly talking about why this matters and why women matter and why this audience, this female audience of fans, needs to be served differently. And again, why female athletes deserve more respect. So it just becomes kind of a day-to-day conversation then to really make change.
Independent of ESPNW, which obviously people go to because they're getting certain content, certain writers, certain points of view. You're a high-ranking female executive at ESPN, so you are privy to data and other demographic information. Whether it's anecdotal or whether it's something else you see, how would you define the ESPN viewer, and do they make any delineation right now in terms of the gender of the person they're either watching on TV or reading?
Does the fans make that distinction?
Yeah. Do you feel that if someone sees Jemele Hill or if someone sees a Sarah Spain versus these are just random names versus John Buchegrass or Jay Harris, does the male viewer think anything differently still in 2017 that a woman is delivering this as opposed to a man?
I think it gets down to knowledge. You know, if the woman is holding her own and is super knowledgeable and credible, then there's no distinction. She's having an incredible impact on the discussion. But we have seen, we've studied sort of women's responses, and it's the presence of female talent and the role of female talent is super important to women. I mean, that's like a huge shining star of I'm included, and this network cares about me, and this brand is actually creating a place where women are equals and can speak their voice. So we literally just did a study with women around SportsCenter and seeing their reaction to our female talent, and they pick up every detail, first of all, you know, everything that she's wearing, how she's standing, her posture. And women like Carrie Champion and Hannah Storm and Jemele Hill, who really have a great presence and are clearly knowledgeable and have experience, they make a huge difference. They're like, okay, this brand is for me. This network is for me. I feel more included.
How does that – that's interesting. How does that data, or how does that connection to those female anchors, how do you translate that into dollars?
It's a process. I mean, because part of it is then we need to show that that's actually leading to rating increases.
Right.
Either with the female demographic or with the entire population of people who are sports fans. So it's again, it's a process. But the more that we're looking into these kinds of questions, the more that we think we're creating a kind of more inclusive arena, if you will. And I think the same thing goes for the, you know, 6 o'clock Sports Center, right? You have Jemele and Michael have incredible chemistry that is starting to bring in a different audience, where an audience is watching them saying, hey, you know what? I haven't heard this conversation before, and I certainly haven't seen it at 6 o'clock on ESPN. This is feeling more like it's for me.
That's interesting. We'll spend 2 seconds on that, because I find that show a very interesting petri dish for you guys. I think Jemele and Michael are very talented. They've been on this podcast. I know Jemele for a long, long time, and I have great respect for her. I don't honestly believe anybody could go into the 6 p.m. slot right now and game change the ratings. I think the ratings are what they are. I think viewership habits have changed at that time slot in particular. We're also in the most divisive period we have been politically, and I think a lot of people at that time are going to watch local news and cable. So I think Jemele and Michael enter a very challenging environment. That gets me to this. If the actual ratings are lower, but you are bringing in different kinds of people into that slot, more African Americans, more people of color, more women, you're getting buzz, currency, however you guys will judge that. Can that show still be considered successful if in the end, and it is my premise that in the end they will drop ratings, because I think anyone in that slot is dropping ratings. How do you as an executive view that? Because you are in a business where ultimately, you know, right now the Nielsen rating is sort of the bottom line in terms of, you know, do we keep these things going for a long term?
Yeah, I mean, it's a delicate calculus, you know.
Right.
I mean, I think that's the type of thinking we go through on a daily basis. You know, is the quality of the content, you know, the most important thing to sort of keep this kind of conversation going? And what are the ratings implications? So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you got to weigh them both. Because, you know, even if you look at something like 30 for 30 in our films,
right,
they have had an enormous impact on our brand. And out of the gate, you can't say the ratings were through the roof. But over time, that brand has picked up incredible steam. It's done wonders for us in terms of being envisioned as storytellers. And then lo and behold, you win an Oscar. So again, sometimes taking the long view and not being at the mercy of, you know, the latest Nielsen rating is really important. And that's why you have to have, you know, executives with a good strategic vision and also have a sense of maybe at the end of the day, great content is great content. And that's kind of the overriding decision.
Well, as a fan of Outside the Lines and 30 for 30, I appreciate any ESPN executive who espouses what you think, because I think at the end of the day, you have to have calling cards that show the you know, the viewer, the reader, the listener, that you're a brand just beyond right. the noise, that you sort of stand for something more that's intellectual or journalistically sound. So I like hearing that. I do think, though, that, and you probably know this from ESPNW, it's a daily fight sometimes to push that, you know, there's value in this. You know, if ESPNW does something that really is fantastic, it's not going to get the same amount of traffic if there's a poll on the front of ESPN that says, should Tony Romo go to Team X? It's
sure.
That is just logic. So you need, I'm sure you would agree, you need executives or you need decision makers to sometimes sort of stay the course with quality, even if it's not going to get the same kind of numbers as something else. This is not to knock a Tony Romo poll, but something else that's obviously going to be more populist.
Oh, totally. Like even the short film we debuted on March 1st, When
right.
I Play.
We get to that, right?
You know, that over 2 days had a million nine views on Facebook.
That's
like
pretty
for
good.
Us, that's yeah. fantastic.
You want to explain what this project is? I would have asked you about it, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, we, as you said, we've been around for 6 years with ESPNW, and more importantly, we've been talking, having this conversation around women as fans and as athletes within the company. And we really wanted to do something to sort of declare a point of view at this point in our evolution. And Allison Glock is one of our top content creators at the company, but also certainly for W.
Right. She's written a lot of sort of well-known pieces.
Yeah,
right?
Incredible pieces. And she was feeling a little bit pent up, you know, everything that's going on in the culture, everything that's sort of we're dealing with day to day. She wanted to give voice to not only what she was feeling, but what she felt sort of her colleagues and her inner circle were feeling. And so she started with a poem. And the poem essentially became the basis for this When I Play short film, as we call it. And it's all about, you know, women declaring their power and also, more importantly, talking about the impact sports has on them. You know, sports gives you this confidence. It makes you feel like one with your body and strong with your body, and it's really this sort of empowering place. And so she cast an all-female athlete cast. It was primarily an all-women senior production crew. And we started putting images to this incredible poem that she wrote, this really fiery, unapologetic poem about the power of sports for women. And we debuted it on March 1st. And really, it's incredible because, as hopefully you see, Richard, it's a powerful piece. There's nothing sort of lukewarm about it. And so on some level, you expect, okay, there's going to be a faction of incredible criticism.
Right.
And it's amazing how it's such a powerful piece, and it's almost universally embraced. I think I saw literally two negative comments on our page about it.
These are women of different ages, whether it's teenagers, whether it's in their 20s and 30s, and they are talking about what they love about their particular sport.
Not so much their particular sport, but more
or
about
sport,
how
the sport as a concept.
Competing makes them feel.
Okay.
And how this is such an empowering place. So, you know, there's lines like, my effort, my ambition, my desire, it's for me. You know, when I play, I keep my own score. It's like these very declarative, powerful messages about, gosh, playing just brings me to a whole different place. And I'm free.
How many women are in the – or did you film?
Yeah, there's upwards of 10
okay.
athletes from the Atlanta area.
Okay.
And then we had them give testimonials on our site as to why it was so important to be featured. And then we segue into incredible footage of all the athletes we know and love – like Serena Williams and Carly Lloyd and Katie Ledecky, and just how on some level these athletes are equal. You know, the everyday athlete who's powerlifting or playing soccer or doing yoga, you know, her experience as an athlete is as valid to a degree as these world-class athletes.
This is a good segue to get into ESPNW. So let's start off with just I am on ESPNW a lot as someone who covers women's basketball. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, I'm probably more of a power user of that site. Plus, I teach with Jane McManus at Columbia. So I'm obviously close with one of your key staffers there. In your opinion, what is the editorial charter of ESPNW.com?
Yeah, well, there's a few things. I mean, one for sure is to tell stories that often go untold. We think about that a lot. There's so many female athletes doing incredible things that just don't get the spotlight. And again, that's not always the world-class athlete. I mean, yes, it is very much, you know, we're talking right now about the U.S. women's national team for hockey and how they're battling for equality still in the year 2017. But we also talk about, you know, the woman who ran 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents, which, you know, maybe without W, that would never get covered.
Right.
So we, again, a little bit like the When I Play film, all these athletic experiences are valid, and we try to give a place and a home for those things. In addition, you know, in terms of our charter, it's to address issues in sports that potentially go unaddressed. You know, I think one of our breakthrough moments was a few years ago with the Ray Rice incident, where we actually really delved into domestic violence and sexual assault in a way that I don't think was ever addressed before in the sports world. You know, it was about to become an issue that was somewhat sloughed off. Oh, guys being guys, and that's what they do. And if there wasn't a video, none of us would have known about it. As opposed to, you know what? This happens way too often. We should get really serious about the issue, and it's not okay. So tackling really tough issues in addition to great storytelling is super important for us in terms of having balance.
One of the interesting things about ESPNW that I think one – here's how I guess I'd phrase it. There's an advocacy part of ESPNW just inherently sort of what it is. There's a supporting of women's sports, and I think people sort of have to understand that because women's sports are not supported in the same way men's sports are. Just look at the amount of coverage that one gets versus the other. That said, how critical can ESPNW be of women's sports or a women's athlete? And do you think the site tends to opt more for optimism than criticism, where if the reverse was for men, there might be criticism? I didn't really ask that question the best way, but do you know what I'm saying? Because you do have this advocacy element that you have to have. At the same time, I think in order eventually to be established, you have to be critical when criticism is warranted of a particular athlete.
Yeah, no, I think maybe in our early days, we took sort of the optimistic route. But I think now, particularly with the talent that we have, with the confidence we have, with the experience we have, we don't sugarcoat much. You know, I think we call it like we see it. And actually, if anything, we always are looking for point counterpoint. You know, we really are trying to get a debate going and a discussion to going. And it's not always the positive rules out. You know, we've talked a lot about Hope Solo, you know, and is that in that case, you know, was she getting off lightly or was she getting lots of criticism in the same way? Was she being held accountable? And I think ultimately she was held accountable. So, you know, we are always trying to look at both sides of the equation. And I think we've definitely grown in the place where if something's wrong, it's wrong. And if somebody acts, you know, in an awful way, we try to call it like we see it.
How big is the staff?
Right now, we're over, you know, I just had a team meeting last week and over 50 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
From editorial to everything else.
Yeah, it's everything else, you know, so it's everything from the folks on marketing that work on the business to the folks in PR who work on the business. And it's pretty great to know that, you know, we started with 5 people And it was like, prove it.
Who were the five in addition to you? Did you start with an editor or just the five business people?
It was mostly – we certainly had an editor. Right. Allison Creekmore was an original editorial contributor. Kelly Love, who's still with us to this day, was one of our originals. But we did start with some sales folks and some social media directors.
Wow.
Yeah, but, you know, the real turning point is getting that editorial team in a great place, which we are now.
What kind of traffic does it regularly get?
We're in a really good place in that front, too. Bless you.
Thank you.
In that we've been growing, you know, essentially year over year. So we can get you the data, but essentially, you know.
I mean, if it's proprietary to you, I'm not going to put you on it. I mean, yeah. But you want to give it ballpark so people know?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I would say it's a true growth story, you know, where upwards of 5 million on ComScore, upwards of 9 million if you look at Omniture. Mm. And it's good because it's up over zero the first year.
Right. I love the ComScore versus Omniture battles.
Isn't it?
We have those at Sports Illustrated as well. What is a piece you think the site hasn't done yet? Or I take it back. I'm not going to call it the site. Let's call it the brand.
Yeah.
What's a piece that you have that the brand has not attacked yet that you think it should? Has ESPNW – I mean, the thing is, there's such infinite stories.
Yeah.
Right? But do you think you have done domestic violence in sports enough? Do you think you have done performance-enhancing stuff for women athletes specifically? Do you think you've done enough in, you know, take the reverse, like the rise of youth hockey in America for women? Is there anything out there that
there's so much
like you feel like that's like maybe the next frontier for you that you you know, virtual reality when it comes to women's athletes and how they can use that to become better athletes?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's, you know, super current right now is what the U.S. Women's National Hockey
right.
Team
you guys have done a good job on that. I have it on site here. Yeah.
You know, and the fact that they're standing up for equal treatment, it sort of begs the question, okay, in a four-year Olympic cycle, they only get paid 6 months out of that 4 years. And in that 6 months, they get paid $1,000 a month. And that's women's ice hockey that actually wins world championships and is pretty much in the gold medal game every year in the Olympics. If that's hockey, what really is going on at a lot of these Olympic sports and with governing bodies and how women are being compensated?
Right.
But it's eye-opening, right? I mean, even when you start looking at, you know, what the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team makes and what WNBA players make. Like, you know, you start digging into the economics of this and you really realize there's a lot of great inequity here.
Two questions about content that's interesting to me. When someone at ESPN does a story that is women-centric, uh-huh. How does it work in terms of where it appears, and do you guys try to fight for it to appear on ESPN? I guess it could always cross-platform, but how's that work?
Yeah, it's become more cross-platform.
Okay.
I mean, ideally we know about projects ahead of time, and so, you know, if anything, we can amplify a great story.
Right.
But for the most part, we've gotten to the place of sharing it and making it as accessible to our fans as possible. And then vice versa, you know, when we have a great big project, like we just did The Road to 23, an oral history around Serena Williams.
Right, I saw that.
So when we have a great big piece like that we've been working on for months, we try to make sure every platform is aware of it so we could just all amplify it and talk about it and have our own take on it. So it works. It works both ways.
Laura, you're too savvy an executive to really do what I would love you to do here, and that's trash some fellow colleagues. But since you're not going
to do that.
I'm on the front of ESPN.com right now.
Yep.
And I'm seeing, as we're taping this on a Friday, so Jason Pierre-Paul has agreed to a four-year contract. Fantastic. Obviously, there's NCAA stuff all across this. Oh, there's Stephen A. Smith and Will Cain debating about some nonsense. So here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Is it frustrating that we don't see ESPNW in primary spots on ESPN.com on a daily basis? And what is that fight like for you to try to get that site to get what is – arguably the biggest fire hose in sports, ESPN.com.
Yeah. I think if anything, we've made really good progress in that front. You know, they're our colleagues, so we're constantly talking about it. And I think over the past week alone, like, we've had tons of W stories featured. Again, a lot around the hockey story.
Right.
Certainly, because that was so current. The Serena Williams piece I mentioned.
Right.
You know,
that did get pretty good placement.
That was front and center.
Agreed.
When I Play was front and center. So, you know, for us, though, too, and from a business standpoint, Richard, like, yes, you want the most possible traffic, but you also want the right traffic. And so for ESPNW.com, we built that site for women and be a destination for women. So sometimes actually featuring it on ESPN.com even more prominently is a little bit to diminishing returns when you're actually talking about the business of selling digital,
right,
and the fact that you want a more pure female audience. So it's a little bit of a give and take, but we're always having those conversations, and I think if anything, we're working really, really well together.
I know that ESPN does research on demographics all the time.
Yep.
You have a very sort of strong and vibrant research department, and I know that they recently found that, and you mentioned this earlier in the podcast, the ESPN audience has a ton of women in its audience, and a ton of women who make money, like significant money. But
hugely influential women.
But they're often not targeted by advertisers. Is there anything that you can do in your position as sort of the head of women's initiatives to find a way to get the women who watch ESPN, at least at other parts, and have money into your tent? How do you do that, if you can do that?
You can do that. I mean, I think it's part of our kind of phase two strategy. You know, kind of one was establishing a brand and having a distinctive voice and really making a difference in the landscape. And now we're having bigger, broader conversations about just ESPN overall, serving women more deeply, and how do you navigate women to the content they really want. Because, again, in our research, we've seen women find ESPN incredibly credible, right? We're the authority. They give us the props that we're the leaders.
Right.
But then they're not always so sure that we have the content that they would love. And lo and behold, we kind of do, you know, between 30 for 30 and E60 and SportsCenter features and a lot of the stuff we're doing at W. So the trick is to get literally the 47% of our viewing audience that's on TV, which is legit, you know, navigate them to all this other content, particularly digital content that they could really like that they're maybe not aware of right now.
It's very clear that you have had, in the last 2 years, more of ESPNW's talent has appeared on sort of the mainstream ESPN channels as well as ESPN audio. That's something that necessarily didn't happen the first 2 years or so, but it really has happened lately. How much do the front-facing people like Sarah Spain owe to you that you used your sort of juice within the company to let executives and executive producers and people like that know that you have to feature our people on these other platforms so that our branding can get out there in new places in the ESPN universe?
Well, I think you owe more to their talent.
Right. That's not to knock diminish their talent.
No, but seriously, I mean, the fact that, you know,
except for Jay McManus's talent. That would be the only talent I'm going to diminish because we're buddies.
But it's like anything in life, right? You get the opportunity, you have to seize it. And these women were given the opportunity and they've never let go of it, right? And so, okay, once in a while, you know, Sarah would appear on SportsCenter. And now it's happening all the time,
right,
around the horn, on, you know, with Lebatard, on SportsCenter. Same thing with Kate. You know, she was given an opportunity. Hey, sit in Bob Lee's OTL chair once in a while. And she's done an amazing job. And so a lot of it, I think, speaks to the talent. And maybe, you know,
so you're not taking any credit, basically.
I don't know. You can give it to me, but I won't take it.
All right. And for the record, so anybody doesn't complain, Jay McManus is incredibly talented. So relax, calm down, send your emails to Laura. All right, Laura, a couple more things, and then we'll get you out of here. So you can. What does an ESPN executive, by the way, do after a podcast like this? Do you head to like John George or something like that and
oh,
eat
I
with
wish.
Mitt Romney, or what happens exactly?
Since I'm 37 weeks pregnant, I probably will go get a bagel someplace.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, we're far away from what I consider the best bagel place in New York City.
What do you like? H&H?
Well, H&H historically has that tag, but I'm not sure. Not sure it has that take. I actually think the best bagel in New York is at a place called Lenny's on 97th and Broadway. Lou Pellegrino, do you want to weigh in here if you want
it's
to pop
that
in?
Not that far away from here.
It's not that far. Yeah, but you're at 37 weeks. You shouldn't be traveling that far
right.
for a bagel.
No, that is a solid bagel choice.
Do you have any that? Is there anything else? Have you ever had Absolute, which I think many people consider the best, but the lines are too long on like 109th and Broadway in New York?
No.
That would be my suggestion to both you and Laura if you're ever Laura after you give birth, head to Absolute Bagels. I think it's 109 in Broadway. That's the new H&H.
Now that's a valuable tip.
Yeah, nice. That's a valuable tip. And by the way, the people who are listening in Kansas and Louisiana are like, get on with it. So I will. All right, Laura, a couple more things. So where should ESPNW be in, let's say, 5 years?
Well, part of it goes to your previous question, which is, you know, ideally we're influencing the rest of the company, where I think W can get even more focused on who we're serving and what we really stand for. So part of it's a parallel path, you know, as we have these discussions and talk about appealing to women across our platforms, I think W continues to grow, certainly in the event space, certainly in the digital space, but I think we get even more focused on who our audience is and not trying to have to do everything in terms of serving women.
I don't know if this is too ghetto-ized an idea, but should there be a goal towards getting an ESPNW television show?
Yes and no. I mean, on some level, we want to continue to showcase our female talent. So if that carries the W brand, great. If it doesn't, I think it's still a huge sign of progress. So those are the conversations we're having. Like, the best talent we have in our company, do they have the right platform? And are they showcased enough? And are we putting them front and center enough? So it's more of a conversation of that. How do you feature the best talent and where?
All right, I have four more for you. This is sort of just going to go roundabout different places. Uh-huh. Front-facing women at your network, particularly Jemele Hill, Jessica Mendoza, and Sage Steele, take an inordinate amount of crap online, yeah. Particularly on Twitter. The company can't stop people from doing that, with the exception, obviously, if they get to threats and stuff like that. You can report that to the locally. You could talk to Twitter. We could have, obviously, an hour debate on as to whether and how places like Twitter have dealt with this. But what is your reaction to this as a women executive in the sports media business when you see front-facing women get attacked? And the reality is, Laura, and I think this is just no BS – the attacks are different on women than men. That is just the reality of the situation. And Jemele, Jessica, and Sage get attacked for different reasons, right. But they are prominently and often attacked, particularly on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's nothing short of it's gross. I mean, truly. You know, we've talked about this a lot for the past year. You know, Sarah was featured in that great More Than Mean PSA that really shed light on the issue.
Went viral, right?
And it was appalling to a lot of people, and it was a huge eye-opener to a lot of people. I mean, we had some executives who said, gosh, I never realized it was that bad. And I think the thing that it is really disheartening with women is it becomes so sexualized and so personal quickly, and that's the difference between what men and women face in terms of criticism. Like, a man might be called a jerk, but then for a woman, you know, you're threatened.
Right.
And it's serious. And you know, we've talked a lot about how we can support our talent more and put security measures in place where, you know, they shouldn't feel like I'm doing my job and I'm getting these kinds of insults and threats day to day. So it's hugely prominent topic for us, but it's a perfect example of the inequity and what women in the business have to face that maybe men don't even understand.
Right. But the thing is, these women have to be on social media, right? I mean, they don't have to be by choice, but the reality is in their jobs, that is essentially part of your job now.
Right. I mean, you could say you don't have to be, but it seems like—
How do you promote your content?
Exactly.
How do you promote
to
your product?
To stay relevant, to stay current, it seems such a vital piece of the puzzle now.
The ESPN Summit is, or the ESPNW Summit.
By the way, you should come one of these years.
That's a little, might be a little pricey for Sports Illustrated Management.
Maybe give you a discount.
You think? What a boondoggle from, by the way, one of my favorite.
It's not a boondoggle.
I know you guys don't like that word. One of my favorite things to do when it comes to ESPN employees is to tweet out something like, for those of you not invited to the ESPNW Summit, I still love you even if you're even if your company doesn't. I love just being a wise ass and doing
that. But we cover major content there. No, I think that's the thing. We do it under palm trees and beautiful skies, but it's serious.
All right, so I'm going to give you the opportunity and the platform to talk about this. It's officially called the ESPNW Summit.
ESPNW Women in Sports Summit.
Okay, and basically, and correct me at any point if I'm incorrect here, it's 2 days where you have very high profile women in sports, women in sports business, talking about sort of the issues of the moment, correct?
Absolutely.
So you've had in the past, like Serena Williams, I'm sure you've had essentially the most high profile athletes in this country, right?
Sure.
Right.
And we feature pretty much every time around, we have a panel called World Class Athletes. And so in Olympic year, we try to focus on Olympics.
Right.
Like last year, we literally had 12 Olympians.
Wow.
And then in non-Olympic years, you know, who are the top of the top? You know, we had Carly Lloyd right after the World Cup with her trainer, James, just talking about, like, literally her 10-year plan.
Wow.
And how she'd been training. They were on a regimented training program for 10 years, and she was at year 8. And she had, you know what? She had surpassed her goals. Isn't that hard to believe?
Is this a business? People can pay to hear these experts, basically?
I think that's a little bit sort of where people don't follow the track of it a bit. But it's really meant to be this incredible forum and gathering place for senior executives and influencers.
It's like Davos, basically, is what you're trying to...
I mean, ideally, we're getting there.
Right, right.
Where real business gets done and real conversations are happening and real collaborations are happening. But, you know, you have serious conversations about pay equity.
Right.
And you're really talking about women in leadership and what are the challenges, what are the barriers. You know, you're talking about... We had a huge discussion about social media harassment last year and talking about what do we do to sort of change that dynamic. So it's real conversations that really before this conference just weren't being had because there was no venue for it.
So the people in the audience are whom?
It's more senior level executives in the sports
business. From Nike, let's say, or something like that.
Sure. It runs the gamut. There's brands, you know, whether it's Adidas and Under Armour to fellow media companies like Fox Sports sends quite a lot of women to leagues and league partners. And then
you left the Fox Sports people, and that's very nice.
And actually, more like 10 of them.
Wow.
And they're great women who are kind of the same, cut from the same cloth in terms of trying to make some change. But then there's some nonprofit organizations that are there. There's a lot of representation from the college sports space. So we try to basically cover every corner of the women in sports universe and get all those voices together.
If I remember this, Laura, there are some of those panels are streamed live.
Yeah, a lot of them are.
Right, a lot of them are. So if you are just sitting, if you're a woman listening to this podcast, I know there's a lot of young female journalists who listen to this. So if you're, let's say, a young reporter in Idaho covering Boise athletics, this stuff is streamed. Like, you can go to ESPNW and watch, like, the panel on sexual harassment in sports live, generally
Absolutely.
Speaking.
And ESPN3.
Okay, yeah. So that's – because that is one thing I have noticed that I remember the first couple of years of this. I don't think I had access so much to the panels, but now it feels like I have access to most of them.
Oh, yeah. In the last 5 years, we've been streaming it more and more live.
Smart.
And last 2 years,
Doesn't hurt the business, don't think?
No, not at all.
It's interesting.
I mean, we want to, get this content out to as many people, and we realize it's hard to get there in person.
Yeah.
It's hard to get out of the office for 2-3 days.
That's good. I support that. And I actually think sometimes these panels are pretty both educational, informative, and very, very valuable.
The
so
only
I'm glad you're doing that.
Don't stream a panel or a keynote is when the speaker knows they're going to curse or say something that's going to get them in trouble. And they say, hey, can you cut the live stream for just my portion?
I know. And by the way, I had a string on this podcast of like 5 explicit podcasts, but I don't believe I've cursed on this one. I'll keep it clean for a little.
I mean, I'm here in person.
You're here in person. Yeah. You're 37
you're
weeks pregnant.
Polite.
It feels. I don't want your baby to be to hear any language. All right, here's the last one, Laura. This is a fun one. Most people, even if they know you, might not know this. You were an All-America field hockey player, correct?
Correct.
In college, right?
Yeah.
Duke?
In high school, too, if I want to brag.
does that mean because you're like all things Duke, basically, because of your athletic connection?
Absolutely.
Do you know Mike Krzyzewski?
Yes.
You met him? You
yes.
like him?
He's a bigger presence in person even than you would think.
You want to explain to me why Duke seemingly although you know what? They've had a pretty good year in women's basketball. They finally, in the post-Gestin course years, Joanne McCauley, that's a whole other podcast in itself, finally had a good year. All right, so you're an All-American in field hockey. Yeah. I don't know much about field hockey outside of obviously watching it during the Olympics. What does it take to be a great field hockey player?
You got to be tough. I mean, it's more of a contact sport than you would think. So it takes that type of, you know, physicality and obviously tons of endurance.
What position were you?
Center forward.
Which, so you're a scorer, basically.
Basically.
You're a sniper.
Yes.
What? So, all right, so is there a equivalent that our audience can, like, compare you to? Like, who would be your hockey equivalent? Were you, like, Lemieux?
Oh, or gosh, Gretzky, or is that too? I would love to have been Lemieux or Gretzky.
Steve Yzerman?
Maybe more Steve Yzerman, but even that might be a little.
That's a Hall of Famer.
That's a pretty high bar.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, with the Rangers right now, a little more JT Miller.
Okay, so then, all right, so you're an All-American center forward, which means you obviously had to score goals. So what was the sort of the best part of your game? Were you just like a really good shot, or could you out-tough people to get the ball and score? Like, what made you an All-American?
Well, you know, there's a scorer's mentality. Like, there's some folks who just sort of, we call it in the circle, you're just rough and tough and do whatever it takes to score. So for me, I was definitely motivated by the sensation of scoring. But then, yeah, it was my shot. We had these things called corners, where you essentially has a penalty.
I kind of like that, actually. It's
yeah,
cool.
You line up, and oftentimes I was the featured shooter, and I scored a lot of my goals that way.
On that, okay. Was there a particular corner that you liked? Or could you go to each corner?
Each corner.
So if I was an opposing coach scouting you, I wouldn't necessarily be able. You know how like a lot of times in soccer you scout these guys, and sometimes guys go have a certain way they kick the penalty kick, and eventually you can sort of stop them.
Yeah.
So not you. You would go to
not
you go multiple corners,
and it's hard to stop speed.
This is a dumb question, but are the sticks all? Does everybody use the same stick, or can you get your own specialized stick in field hockey?
There's some specialization, but for the most part, there's not tons of variation. And I, when I was playing with those old wooden sticks.
I love those old wooden
sticks. Now it's all fiberglass and beautiful, beautiful.
Equipment. I know you can't think like this, but is there ever a part of you that's like, if field hockey like had the same kind of like popularity as women's basketball, maybe you're like Diana Taurasi or something?
Well, my dad would talk like that.
Right.
You know, for me, I never really imagined that, but my dad would say that. He would actually say that more like, odd if you were a guy.
Well, that's
look what
that's
you could be
yeah.
Doing.
You'd be like Kobe Bryant or something
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Lou, did you want to weigh in here?
I have a question because I watched the women's field hockey during the Olympics.
Isn't
and,
it fast and great.
It is cool.
It's fast. It's great because I'm somebody who grew up playing ice hockey and I love the sport. And what I found to be weird, the field that you play on, if it's even called the field. Do they soak it with water, and is it just to make sure that
to make the ball
like travel along faster?
Yeah.
And, oh, okay.
Because you know, AstroTurf could get dried out, especially you know, depending where you're playing. You know, Rio gets really super hot, so hosing it down just makes the pace of play even faster.
Got it. Because I'm watching the game, and I'm going. Those look like the little, you know, like when you see a football game, a receiver makes a catch and he drags his foot and it kicks the beads up and it makes it easy. And I'm going, what are those little pellets that are? And then I'm finally seeing it in slow motion. I'm going, oh, they soak the field. Okay. But I was just to make the track faster for the ball to go on.
That's the thing I think is underappreciated with the game is, you know, you see it at a high school level. We're all playing on like thick grass. I know there is some AstroTurf now in high school. But on the college level, between great AstroTurf that's then wet and watered down, oh my gosh, the pace of play is really fast.
Yeah, it was an excellent sport to watch. I really enjoyed it.
Nice. You're just saying that.
Yeah, no, look at this. It's like it's the first field hockey podcast that we've ever done. All right, Laura, I feel like I was too nice to you. I'm not going to lie. And I'm going to save my intense questioning, I guess, or anger for the next ESPN executive comes in. So at this point, it is what it is. All right, let's go through Laura's. You know, first of all, I want to give you credit because most of the ESPN executives I deal with, their title is like 87 words, but yours is like kind of a crisp 9 words, I feel like, which is nice.
Thank you.
You are the Senior Vice President of ESPNW and Women Initiatives. You have been at ESPN since 2003. And in all seriousness, Laura is the point person behind ESPNW. So if you have read that site or if you have seen some of the content that that site is done. This is the woman who basically brought that to fruition. And just on a personal note, as someone who worked for a women's magazine that folded, which was a really kind of rough thing for us at Sports Illustrated, who love women's sports, to sort of see. Again, this is a long time ago. It's great to see that ESPNW is doing really well because I think it does set up for some other places to have success in the market, especially if they decide to sort of specify in a specific sport. You always need a large brand to succeed, in my opinion, to convince advertisers and the public that there's a forum for this. Laura, you came and you slogged over to our studio, and Lou Pellegrino and I appreciate this. Thank you very much for being part of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Lou. It's my pleasure.
All right, back in the studio, my thanks to Laura Gentile of ESPNW and ESPN's women's initiatives. I thought she'd be an interesting guest just because she has one of the more interesting executives jobs at ESPN regarding, this sort of, I don't know if sub-brand is the right phrase, but this, it's not a sub-brand, it's a brand. But it's an important one for them, and it's now a business really built to serve women who love sports, and as she mentioned, with all these different digital, social, television, films, and event arms. So if you have read ESPNW or you're interested in women's coverage at ESPN, she's one of the point people there. So my thanks to her for her to come in and into the studio, which does not always happen, so much appreciated. Seth Greenberg of ESPN was the previous guest on this podcast. You can check him out. Brian Anderson of Turner Sports. Before that, ESPN's Jim Trotter and the Fox Sports broadcasters Jamie Little and Shannon Spake. We will have Dave Meltzer coming up to talk about WrestleMania and the coverage of, or the journalistic coverage of wrestling, and got some other good podcasts coming up as well. Let me thank Lou Pellegrino, my producer again, the people at Digital Media, as well as Sports Illustrated Brass. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.